Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to, I believe this is episode 63.
64.
Buddy. Oh man, I'm losing count. Episode 64 of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, and we are in a brand new, spanking, shiny, glorious, wonderful location that we wish we could show you.
We wish, yeah. That's the thing. We wish we could show you.
We will show you very soon, hopefully. Yeah, we're here together, me and Mo, in the brand new video podcasting studio at M94.5. And it's really great. This is what we talked about. If you heard the show last week, about the reason why we met up was basically to talk about this. Very soon, and we were planning for this week, just some technical issues, but we...
Yeah, so for tonight... It's the podcast studio. For tonight, you gotta sadly take the video out of it.
tonight is just like a really pretty just podcast studio. But it's cool. And we do still have a great guest coming soon. Just to I forgot we're moving this this promo to the end, right?
Yeah.
Right. So let's just jump in. So we're at N94.5, and hopefully really soon, at least by the next guest, we can get this up and running, and we're going to go ahead and get a good fresh rebranding for the podcast. I want to get, like, we're going to have some new photos, some new fonts, we're going to branch into video. So we're going to obviously have like a YouTube and be able to cut some clips up for social. And I'm really, really pumped about that. So is there anything else on your mind before we jump right in?
I don't think so.
Okay, I'm really...
Wait till the very end, we got some news for you.
Right.
Also regarding the thing we mentioned last week.
Right.
Talking about Jordan's album pre-orders and probably pretty cool merch that could be there if you take part, but we'll keep that for the end.
That's right. Okay, yeah, stick around for that. I'm glad you mentioned that. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, we have a really great guest today. Very, very funny, very friendly, very humble man from India, living here in Munich. He's a stand-up comedian. His name is Gagan Gopal. Hi, Gagan.
Hey, Jordan. Thanks for having me, guys. How are you?
Good, dude. It's a pleasure to have you here. It's a shame that we can't show your beautiful face. You showered and everything.
Yeah, I took a shower. I thought it'd be a video podcast. I'm completely... I also put on some perfume. But I smell great. I want to tell everyone who's listening to this, I smell great and I took a shower.
I mean, I vouch for him. I think he smells great.
Yeah, I think that's the next level. Probably next week we'll have video, and the week after you can also smell our guest. I'm not sure, but we're sorry to put all this as it turned out unnecessary pressure on you.
You mean the smelling part or like being smelled?
I mean, in general, the preparations you did to be on camera.
I mean, we were going to smell you either way, but we're sorry we pressured you into smelling differently than you would have.
I always enjoy people smelling me.
It's super cool to have you on the show. I remember, I think it was... No, 2020, we didn't do that. Was it early 2020 or 2019 when we did this improv show together?
I think it was, it cannot be early 2020. I think it was late 2019.
Yeah, because I remember it was, wasn't it chilly outside? Or maybe it was like fall. Maybe it was like fall 2019 or something.
And we had no idea. So I think, I'm hoping it was, I think August or September of 2019. Because improv season was going on. I think the improv, Municon, I think usually they have their...
Right,
sessions.
It was a festival or something, right?
It was a festival, yes, it was a festival.
Ah, that makes sense. Yeah, we had our mutual friend Emma on the show a few episodes ago. I don't know if you got to check out that one.
The episode, yes, I saw. I heard the episode. Emma is so great. She's my good friend, and she was so lovely and funny in the episode too. She's amazing.
She was a great guest. Yeah. It's going to be hard for you to live up to the expectations I have for you after that. So,
Oh, man. Quickly, Jordan, I've met you. Tom, we've never met, right?
Mo. We have never met.
Mo, I'm so sorry.
No big deal.
But you are so Tom from now on.
I mean, you look like a Tom. I mean, in the video, I can see you, but...
I was super confused because Jordan and I actually talked about a Tom before we recorded. And so I, in my head, it was like, okay, how does he know about him?
Oh, I know Tom Sydak. Is that right?
Oh wait, no, time.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's the name of the Zoom account we're using.
Oh, that
we should have told you.
That makes so much sense, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
No, but it's Mo. But no big deal. No, I don't think we have ever met each other. I've only seen that you already played at Holzkranich, if I'm right. And I know one of the guys who at least used to run these open mics they do. I know. I don't know if you know him, Sebastian Ulrich.
Oh yeah,
yeah. He's I know him.
He's my buddy, Sebastian Ulrich. Yeah, Basti. Mo, nice to meet you, man. I've never met you, so yeah. I was a bit worried. I thought it'll be only Jordan, but it's nice to see another friendly face, Mo. Yeah, great.
Yeah, Mo and I have been doing.
Let's hope it stays friendly.
Yeah, let's hope this. we're watching you, man. No, it's me and Tom have been doing this show since the beginning. No, this is like, yeah, it's episode 64. We used to do it once a month. Now we got into the habit of once a week ever since Corona hit because we had more time and it made more sense to, like, we were home and we had, you know, why not just do more episodes? But yeah, it's he's been producing and co-hosting the show since the very start. So that was really cool. I remember when we came up, like, well, I had the idea for the show and I had recorded the first one. But then I remember we were on this tour. We were in Brighton, the tour that we can't seem to talk about enough on this show. He plays bass in my band, and we have brought up the fact that we played in Brighton, I think, more times than the amount of guests that we've had on the show.
Sure thing.
like 100 times. We're like, did you guys know that we traveled? And I remember that we were staying in this Airbnb, and then, yeah, I just remember we were sitting like across from each other on the different beds, like maybe just like squatting over their beds on our phone. And I was like, hey man, I have this idea and I just want to, I don't know why we were talking about it, but then you just mentioned, like, did you know that I'm like the head of the podcasting station or whatever in 94.5? And then, yeah, we gave it a run, we pitched it, and then it
now
worked.
Now we're here.
It's great, really cool. Great. Now we're here talking to you, my friend.
Yes, I'm very happy.
So when did you move to Munich from India? And well, maybe we should even go further back. Like, where in India are you from?
From Bengaluru. Do you know Bangalore? It's called Bengaluru. It's south of India.
Oh, okay.
And I was not born in Bengaluru, but I was born close to Bangalore. It was, it's called Hassan, 3 hours away. And it's in the south. If either of you have heard of it, it's called the Silicon Valley of India.
It's called the Silicon Valley of India? Really?
Yeah. It's the Silicon City. So there are like hundreds of tech companies back in Bangalore. And they had this tech boom, I think 20 years back, and they're doing really well because of that. You know, the lot of tech companies there.
Ah, okay. I didn't even know about that. Did your family work in the tech industry?
No, my dad had a government job. And he's retired now. Last year he retired. And my mom is a beautiful homemaker. You know, she's amazing at that. But and my sister is a lawyer, by the way.
What?
It's amazing. So she studied and finished her law last year, and now she's practicing. I don't know what do they do. They practice. I don't know what they.
I guess they practice law. Yeah, dude. I feel really similar to you on this because my in my immediate family, you have one sister, but I have one brother. But the connection to like the jobs that they have and what we do feels so similar in the way that. My mom worked for a long time, but for most of my growing up, she was also just a lovely homemaker. And then my dad, you know, he's like a safe environmental and workplace safety, like civil, I don't know, like some sort of engineer for safety and environmental safety for big companies. And then my brother, he only ever wanted to be a doctor. He wanted to be a lawyer. He wanted to be an architect. He used to draw out house sketches on this big canvas in his bedroom.
Wow.
And now he does, sort of tech services for...
He does everything combined.
He does everything combined. He does like tech services for big computer programs, like big computer systems. Anyway, something very complicated. And then me just like fiddling around with guitar and, you know, talking, like spitting into a microphone. And it's just a very, it's funny how like, you know, you have like the serious jobs and then people like us come out and we're like, I don't want to though, you know?
No, I think even my sister, she's doing law. She's doing pretty great at it. I don't trust her anymore. Once she got into law, she's like, I don't know if I can tell you everything what I really feel. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, people in law, it's always a bit sketchy, you know, you have to just, the truth is bended, everything is strange. But yeah, I'm just messing with it. But she's amazing. She's always more mature in the house too, more mature than me, my dad and my mom. She's like, oh, she's more calm and civilized. Right. I don't know if you have that same thing with your brother, but.
Oh, totally, man. Is your sister the firstborn?
No, she's younger than
you're
me.
You're the older one?
Yeah, I'm the older black sheep or something, but yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, it's definitely the same with my brother, but he's got 4 years on me. So he's always kind of been like, I mean, ever since he moved out when we lived together, yeah, he's always been like the calm voice of understanding and reason. I mean, he can party. He's a cool guy. But when it comes to like talking about business stuff and like mortgages and taxes and of course credit understandings and this and that, he's always had a great grasp on that stuff and can be really calm about it all. And then me, I'm just like, I'm skitzing out like a computer with wires barely touching, you know, like doesn't make any sense for me. I'm better at just like strumming. that's what I do. But
yeah, as long as you can get to Brighton, you know, it's
Did we talk about that yet? No, but that's really interesting that like, cause I guess it's pretty common, in India that people work in more, it's hard to say, but like, is it more commonplace there that people want their families to work in these established fields like law or like being a doctor or being an engineer or something? Is that still the vibe over there these days?
Yes, definitely. I think for the last, how many are we? It's a more stable job, you know. If you're doing engineering or doctor, you get a job for sure. I mean, if you're studying that. So more opportunities, more stability. It's as simple as that. So you have, say, 95 jobs are from engineering firms. Then 5 jobs are, I don't know, an artist or a painter. So obviously mm-hmm. we want to be more stable and get a job in an engineering firm, do engineering. And I think even law is a bit odd now. So, now everything is much better. You have better opportunities. You can do more. But for the last 25 years, its stability is in engineering, doing medicine. I think, yeah, these two main fields.
Okay. And when you were growing up and you had it's probably this sort of social pressure to go into something like that. Was it the pressure to do it that may have pushed you further away from it? Or did you just not have much interest in those things?
Interest in engineering, you mean?
No. Yeah, sure. Or medicine or law or something.
No, I did have interest in engineering, but I think I was a bit lost. Even now I'm so lost and I don't know what to do. Yeah. And I think I was part of the herd. I knew few things. Okay, I'm interested in math and science. So let me follow the herd. Let me follow... this friend of mine, what this classmate he's doing, let me follow him. And so I didn't just follow him in like in a weird stalker way, but I just meant in terms of, you know, like I was not thinking too much. And I think these days, I don't want to say these days, these kids, they have so much information. So I think they can choose better. But I think before we didn't have anything, we were like, okay, you can either choose computer science or you can choose biology, you know, and when we're in in 12th grade and, oh, okay, I don't like to touch people, their blood or something. So I don't like biology. So let me just choose something which is less dirty, computer science.
But for a second, because we haven't touched on that, you're talking about those kids these days. How old are you actually?
I'm 29.
Okay.
How old did you think he was?
I didn't. I would have guessed somewhere around the big three.
Somewhere around 30?
Somewhere around 30.
29 is a good guess. I mean, 30 is a good guess for him to be 29.
I'm glad it's a video podcast. It's not a video podcast anymore.
I mean, you look like 23, but regarding how you talk.
Easy there, Tomo.
But I just, because it is not a video podcast, I just wanted to clear it out, because people are probably just going to hear this guy, yeah, these kids these days, and think like, okay, who they got? How old is he?
No, yeah, that is true.
But I want to point out for a second that this is kind of special, and we have a lot to touch on, because you, let me put it like this, our basic white asses did manage to this day to get someone beyond a big Western world bubble. So like, you're the first guy that's not European or North American.
On the show.
Is it like that?
Well, Ali?
We had Ali, true.
Yeah.
True. But we
that was a long time ago.
We have an issue of getting too many people out of our little bubble. So I'm super interested to hear more about like what it's like being a comedian in India, because I have absolutely no clue. Or tell me something about Indian comedy.
Yeah, like did you get inspired there, or did that come later?
In India, I have no idea how the comedy is going on. So I was not doing stand-up there. So I started doing stand-up comedy here 2.5-3 years ago. So to your question, I do have an idea how stand-up comedy is in India. It's pretty great. It's 10 years or 8 years ahead of Germany, for sure. They're doing really well. They have amazing comedians there. And they're doing it for full time. They have like at least 15 to 20 top comedians who are competing against, you know, they're in Melbourne Comedy Festival and they're roaming all over the world. So yeah, we're still very new, and they had the comedy boom, I think, 7 years back. And Germany is going through the transition, except for Berlin. They had long time ago. But yeah, Munich, it's taking, I think we are 8 years behind.
Germany's 8 years behind.
Yeah, in terms of the comedy scene.
Dude, not even just comedy. I think Germany's 10 years behind in, I mean, it's catching up a little bit nowadays with music culture a touch, but I always feel like it's just, especially with tech. I mean, especially with like simplifying something that maybe America, not to like toot my own horn, but like would have had, like, because they're looking for simplicity and they're looking for, I'm trying to think of this, what's like, convenience. Yes. They're looking for like the most convenient thing to just do it easily. And you look at the vaccination website.
Oh man, I hate it.
What a joke, dude.
Why are they taking so long? It's
what a joke. It's like this Windows,
I haven't been on that site though.
It's like a pranked out Windows 95 website that has like, it's all 8-bit and like blocky, and it loads like a picture like when you look at porn in high school. It's ridiculous, dude. And then you go, and then in America they're like, oh, I just got the app, I got the vaccine already. It's like, why don't we have that? Why don't we have like a really simple like click, push, done. Okay, I'm in the system. This took me like 2 different attempts to like click through all these suggestions to get my thing the way that I'm arranged with my blah, 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 blah. And then it was like, we'll send you an email. I never heard anything back. No. I don't even know if I'll get it.
Germany's way behind. Even in tech, they don't want to invest too much in research. I think safety, security is huge in Germany. So, I mean, of course, this is a common stereotype. I saw this ad. I mean, I think it's like a meme or something on online. Someone had posted a URL on the newspaper. It's like a 50-character URL. And Germany is really behind. And I think even India in some ways is so ahead. You know, there's an app in India where I can get milk at 10 in the night. I can just click something. I can get milk or a cigarette. I can get anything. Isn't that crazy?
That's really awesome.
Even getting things from supermarket, I have to go myself. I mean,
and before 8.
And before 8. Oh man, I mean, I don't want to rant too much about Germany. I really love the country, but at the same time, the cons are pretty strong in I mean, they're behind it, and I think they have to catch up a bit.
Dude, I have to be honest. If there would ever be a place that you could vent about your troubles with Germany, I think you are in the most perfect place to do it. I mean, it's artsy fartsy immigrants, man.
Yeah.
Like, your perspective on stuff is what we want to hear. I have plenty of issues too with it. The supermarket thing bothers me so much. I hate that we can't go there on Sundays. I'm so used to, I don't know, like 7-Elevens or just deals that are like a 24-hour shop or like these Berlin kiosks or something that are open. You know, in Munich, it's all just very to this Catholic sort of routine. I don't know. Tom over here is rolling his eyes like, you don't understand. It's actually really respectful to...
No.
I'm kidding.
No, absolutely not.
I'm kidding.
But...
it's the worst Mo impression ever.
Okay, but since we touched on in comedy for a bit, and you started here, we'll get to that, I obviously, but when did you move to Germany?
2013, end of 2013 or 2004, yeah. In October, I came here to do my master's in automotive software because I was still very excited. I'm very excited about working on software, which is very close to the hardware. So I'm in, let's say, a hardware software engineer. So I work really close to the software. I work with sensors. I like building prototypes. And that is something which I'm really excited about. And I think I came here to do my master's in 2013, end of 2013. And I was focused on more in the automotive field, mostly because there are a lot of companies here like BMW, Mercedes-Benz. And I wanted to see what's the latest technology happening in this field. And yeah, that's when I came here.
So it was just the auto industry that led you to Germany, basically. Like you looked around for schools, and you're like, okay, what has like the greatest car industry and tech? And went for Germany, right?
Yeah. So I had no idea about comedy, nothing. I was more excited about the opportunities here in terms of, you know, like, as you said, the car in the automotive industry. And I knew few things were much better in terms of education here. I mean, but of course, I mean, one thing which was really great was it was cheaper compared to, I didn't want to spend so much on higher education. So that is something which was quite clear to me.
What is like the difference between getting an education like that in India as opposed to Germany?
Well, in India, I mean, of course, you can get that education, but the number of opportunities, you should be in the top cream. You should be 1% to get into an institute like that. I think I did get into a few universities in the States, but I didn't want to spend so much on education right then. So I was like, Germany is better. So a few things I wanted to spend here. I think the value was much better in that way.
So that was really like your main focus for most of your time growing up in India was, getting into an industry like that and trying to get into a school like that. Did you have like hobbies or interests that made you feel a little black sheepish, you know, other than like getting into comedy later?
Oh man, I think I was not smart enough. I'm not smart. I mean, I have to like make this clear. I'm just speaking so much crap, but I'm not smart enough to get into those. I mean, I realized that quite early. I mean, even though I wrote those exams, I knew in the back of my mind, like, what am I doing? It's not you. But I just, you know, as I told you before, I was just following the herd. And right. I was so lost then. I used to write all the exams. Oh, maybe I should do this. Maybe I should do that. I mean, there's this saying in India where you should do engineering and then find your passion.
Like, and so,
that's super good, man.
And so that's what you did.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. I followed that rule too. I just like, okay, let me be safe. It's a good combination of safety and security before, you know, exploring other passions, other things.
I just wrote this down. You should do engineering and then find your passion. That's so good, man.
And so you came for your master's. And we talked a lot about pros and cons about living in Germany, but what ultimately made you stay here?
Oh, man. There's so many good reasons. Firstly, I do enjoy, I mean, I had great company. I had great friends here. I was quite lucky in the university. I had like a big group of friends, like 10 to 15 of them. And my girlfriend was also here. She was in a different university. And we've been together. I mean, my current wife, by the way, I don't want her to kill me later. So my then girlfriend, so she was here. But I think the most important reason was, okay, if you're doing your master's here, it's really important. There's no use of doing master's here and then just going back. So I wanted to work here for a while, see actually how the culture is. I mean, the work culture is, and then get back. That was my initial plan. Okay, I'm going to work. I'm going to study here. I'm going to work for a while, get some experience, and then, get back home and serve, contribute to my society. So my home, build something there, you know, back in the city.
Yeah.
So this was my plan when I got here. Right. What made me stay here? Well, apart from my friends here and apart from you, I did enjoy, I think I started being more comfortable about everything here. I really enjoyed.
Like you adjusted to it and it just felt more like you didn't feel as much that you were in this new alien world, but more like, okay, it's just, I'm in Germany and this is kind of my home now.
Yeah. I mean, I was comfortable, but at the same time, I really enjoyed a few parts of the work culture. It's so direct. I really enjoyed, there's no pretense. And I was a bit worried about that. Oh man, how do I pretense? As in, for example, the other day, I spoke to an intern. I was like, "Hey, I need. Do you have some time? I mean, can you get this? I mean, I think I just saw this. Sorry, let me retell you the story. I was sitting here, and my intern was sitting. This intern who was sitting in front, and the project manager, he came and he was like, hey, can you get this done to this intern? Do you have some time? And the intern was like, no, I'm busy. Can we talk about this later in, I don't know, 4 hours or something? And I'm like, what? How could he speak to the project manager like that? That's pretty crazy for me. And I realized then it's like, okay, this is great. Because the respect to time, no hierarchy in terms of, you know, and I really enjoy that. That's everything.
That is really cool. That is really cool. I mean, when your wife, when you said that she was also studying at a different school here, did you guys decide together that you were going to go to Germany, or did someone come before the other one, or did you have that work?
Well, I think we did this. We didn't decide as such. We were both okay. We had this one philosophy before, okay? We're like one day at a time. So we didn't know what is going to happen in the future. So she got into the university here. She had applied. And 6 months later, I got into it, some other university. So we were quite clear. We were quite career driven. So we didn't want to take any decisions based on the relationship. Mm-hmm. It was mostly on our own careers. So we didn't, even the subject she took was completely different from what I took. So we were quite clear of what we wanted and we were chasing that. And it was a great coincidence that she also landed in the same country as I did.
That's unbelievable, man. I mean, that's so lucky because she could have ended up, I mean, she could have ended up in Tokyo or something for, yeah, you know, for her studying. And then you would have been here in Munich and then who knows how long you would have been apart, you know?
Yeah, that is something I think I took it for granted too. I was like, it's going to work out. It always in my life, I always thought, it's going to work out. But I think I'm quite lucky in few things. But I am quite grateful that we did land up in the same country. Even though we were like 7 hours apart, I was in the north and she was in the south in Freiburg, by the way. Mo, you should know this.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful city. And she was there and we used to, and we didn't also, it was long distance, you know, for 1.5 years or 2 years and even more, I mean, when we were working. But we took it one day at a time and I'm so happy it worked out.
That's so crazy, man. That's so incredible. So I do want to talk a little bit. I mean, I feel like we're hitting these big topics, but there's so many little things in between that I want to like pick and pull from. But, you know, I can only look at Munich's creative venues and creative pockets from a musician standpoint. And of course, I have a lot of interest in stand-up comedy, but it's not something that I can do. I've definitely understood that. So what I want to know actually is, like, from your perspective, how long were you living in Munich before you decided to try that? And, well, we can start there. And then, like, do you have, you know, favorite places to perform and why and stuff like that?
How long? I think I stayed here for 3 months before my first improv class. You know, I think I came here Jan 2017. I came to Munich, and mid of March, I was in an improv class somewhere.
Did you see like a flyer somewhere, or how did you find it?
That's a great question. I think I was looking something up online. I wanted to try a few things. Maybe meetup. I don't know where it was. I think I searched some things online, and I was like, oh, there's so many things here. And I was in a small town before. I was in Tübingen. Mo, you should know Tübingen.
Yeah.
Every time you name a city, can you please call him out?
Yeah, I was living in Tübingen.
Can he hear these drops?
I guess so. Can you hear the one?
Oh, yeah, I can.
Yes. Yes, we have drops. I love it.
So I was in Tübingen, and so when I came to Munich, oh my God, there's so many cool things to do in the city. And I was like, oh, improv classes, these classes. And I just saw this, and Jody was hosting it. And I just went there, and there were like three people. So this was comedy related, right? So, and when did I start my first open mic? I think probably it took 8 more months or 1 year later, because...
Did you have a thing like you enjoyed improv, but it like that you knew you needed to kind of do something else? You were like,
yeah.
I need to write my own jokes.
Yeah, there's so many positives about improv. I love improv, the entire culture. Yeah. I was quite lucky to be in a great group, very supportive. And you're great also, Jordan.
Stop it.
Oh, please.
Mo, you should know that, right?
No, I don't. I absolutely have no idea of your skill set regarding improv.
Get out of here, Tom.
No, he was great.
It was a good team. It was a good team.
We were great. I mean, you, me, and Emma. No, it was.
Yeah.
But something for me, improv. I found it a bit. It was not. It was a hit and a miss. Sometimes it used to work. Sometimes it didn't work.
Right.
I was really curious about what makes people laugh. So that something was really interesting for me. And I wanted to also have more control of the crowd, you know, like how can I make sure that they laugh? Okay, this is what,
right.
And so these two things I wanted to really chase. Okay, I wanted to, and in improv, I knew that one night it could be a hit or a miss with the same group, you know, everything.
Yeah, it's always a gamble. It's always a gamble.
It's always a gamble, and it's a lot of variables and everything else. But when improv works, it's amazing.
Yes, so, dude. It's like taking a extremely strong drug or something. When you get that, when you just kill, when you just have this roaring laughter from the crowd, from something that you and like two other people made complete nonsense into some sort of, you know, tangible storyline, and it just happens to land on this perfect, like, and that's why I don't call her potato pants anymore or something. And it's just like, it's like the best feeling ever, man.
For someone who's never got a glimpse of this whole world of stand-up comedy, and obviously I've seen stand-up comedians and so on, but I've never wondered the way you have done about, okay, what does work? How does this craft work to make people laugh, etc. Just in one sentence, probably, you guys, how can you, in an improv class, how can you train that? What do they coach you?
Oh, I mean, I don't know how your experience was with it, but I mean, because so improv, you know, it started as training for actors to keep their minds fresh and to stay on their toes. And there was more like, there are a lot of physical games that just remind you that to be present on the stage and to kind of bounce the personalities and the attitudes off of each other. And then, I'm not so informed, I guess, on who branched things into what and when, but then they formed into different games and became as this huge thing now, like all over the world. But I don't know. We didn't like, I wouldn't say that in improv, anyone tries to teach you to be funny. I think if they're teaching you to be funny, then you're going to be really unfunny. But it's more like either you kind of have an idea or you don't. And it's more about, I mean, the whole key is the yes anding, you know, like someone, you have to really, really, that's the training. You really, really just have to know when someone tosses you something, you walk onto a stage, someone looks at you and they say absolutely anything. Mm-hmm. You have to completely agree instantly. I'm here with you. Like you just told me to get the coals out of the fire before the dragon comes back. Okay, boom. We're in this dungeon. There's coals burning. There's a dragon coming. Who else could be coming? What am I dressed as? No. You know, you have to like play this world. You're instantly committed. And when you're both committed, usually something really funny comes up anyway, because you're just bouncing and bouncing. And then you see that someone's setting up something. Okay. They're like teeing up the ball for you. And if you hit that mark, it's like,
okay, that's the hit and miss, Gagan, you mentioned. And
yeah,
but stand-up comedy is a whole another craft, like intentionally building up something.
Yeah, so improv, as Jordan said, it's about yes-anding. Yeah. It's about being okay to make mistakes, to failing on stage, and all mistakes are encouraged. You know, so they're, oh, okay, we can learn something from the mistakes, and it's okay to make a mistake. So that is something really huge in improv, and so many people make it as a philosophy. Okay, and I found that to be great insight. And it's okay, nothing's gonna happen if you die on stage. So with that, I think I learned a bit of courage. Okay, now I realized I was funny with improv stuff, but secondly, stand up, it is a different ball game, but you are you're being more precise about how you're getting the laughs.
Yeah.
In improv, you're just saying, I say something and they might laugh or they might not. And in stand-up, you are saying exactly this line. And again, they might laugh or they might not, but you know, now sit down and you ask yourself, why are they laughing? Why are they not laughing?
Like so every word is like this, I mean, right? Like every word is this completely intentional choice of where your breaks are, where you talk faster, where you talk slower, where you might have a facial expression with something.
Everything. Like, so yeah, it is improv. Improv is like this goody goody brother, but if stand up is like badass, depressed.
he's the leather jacket with the cigarette.
Like improv is the engineer and stand up is the comedian.
Stand up is the comedian. I mean, if you don't hate yourself, and if you do stand up, there is something wrong. You need validation from 40 people. That's crazy. I mean, I know. I mean, it's completely. I think I'm being more. Oh, you do. You have to hate yourself to be stand up, but it is really harmful sometimes. You know, no one is laughing at you, and you still have to get on stage the next day.
Right.
And that is something you can. I mean, you need to build up to that. It doesn't come that easily.
How many sets were you doing on average on your busiest weeks?
5 to 6. I used to be on stage 5 to 6. But that was like rare moments in Munich, you know, when everything was together. I think 2018.
Yeah.
It was a great time in Munich. Lot of open mics. And we used to have an open mic every night in German and like a couple of nights, I think one or two in English. So in English, there were fewer, but in German, almost every night we had an open mic, and there was such a great ball to play around.
Man, that's some effort, dude. That's crazy, but that's definitely what it takes. Like whenever you hear about anybody who, you know, makes it to a certain level where you hear about them, you can check them out online or something, or maybe they become mega famous like Chappelle or whatever. Then you always hear about like, oh yeah, back in the early days, I was doing like, you know, 10 sets a week. I would go over to the Comedy Cellar. Then I would take the F train over to the, you know, the Laugh-A-Lot club or whatever. And then they're like, you know, they're, if you're really trying to get a spot in certain places, like I guess this is mainly New York, but trying to get a spot into a club, either you're kind of paying to do it. Like you have your own like drink minimum to do it. Or they have a thing called barking, where you're the guy on the corner with the flyers being like, hey, tonight we're going to have, you know, we're going to have Chris Rock and Pete Holmes and, you know, Sam Morril coming up tonight. And then you just get the flyers thrown back in your face. But if you get the people to come, if you can get some tourists to come into the club, maybe you can do like the 11 p.m. or 12 a.m. set. So it's such a dog eat dog business in the States, man. But do you feel this sort of like this hunger in the other comics here, the same way that you hear about it in like other people's stories?
There is hunger, but I feel the number of people who are hungry are less in Munich. Whereas in New York, I like that it is dog eat dog world. Well, because it's been there for years. I mean, that is the birthplace, the mecca, you know, of comedy. So you have Comedy Cellar and Comedy Store, and it's unbelievably great there. And when I say 5 to 6 times a week, it's still nothing. I mean, that was my peak. You know, that was when I was doing a lot to learn how things work. But you should understand, they go 10 times a night in New York.
So they do
10 times a night. So we're talking 5 minutes, and they take a subway and go somewhere else. And they keep honing every joke. And that's unbelievably great for their frequency and getting better. So, of course, here I think we have another advantage. So we have more stage time, you know, we can spend on, you know, you can start your own open mic, you can have your own club, and you can be on stage for longer and try to learn what makes people laugh, what people in New York City are dying. We have it already here. We have, and we just lack, the number of comedians are lesser because the scene is still growing.
Yeah.
So, and of course, now it's a bit diminished, but we're going to come back. I think it's going to take some time. The number of comedians, I would say like 10 to 15, but the really hungry ones are very few. So like, oh, what's working? What's not working?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
How hungry are you?
Oh, I'm so hungry. I mean, are you talking about the comedy stuff?
I'm talking about comedy.
I was very hungry, man. I was like, you know that... I think now I'm feeling a bit, okay, I'm being grateful, Corona and stuff. But when things were going, working really well, Mo, I was so hungry. I was like, okay, I need to get this done. Every other night when I got on stage, I was so happy. Even if I bombed. For me, that was being on stage, testing a joke. Even if it's one joke, one day, that's all I cared about.
Right.
And it was kind of sad in other aspects because many things got affected. I was like, I was not spending too much time back at home. I was cycling back. It was really crazy, but I just cared about jokes and I still care about jokes. That's it.
But so when you think about writing jokes, what's your, like, what kind of angle do you come at it from? Like, I know some people who start with a premise or they start with a location or something that happened to them, or are you more into setting up a story? Can be completely fictional, just knowing that if I put that person in that location and I put myself in that place, then if I hit these beats, you know, like, are you more storytelling comedy or are you more like formulaically just trying to plan out a setup and a punchline sort of? Like, how do you write? I guess that's easier to ask.
So I have a couple of stages, a lot of things I experimented. So I don't enjoy telling stories, and I think because I'm not really great at telling stories, I think I'm more of a joke guy, and I also enjoy jokes. So I just like, okay, there is a setup and there's a punchline, and I like jokes which tell some things about me, you know, something very like a secret, and they get into a peak of who I am. So I just think about what happened. I just feel like, okay, this is something strange. Okay. Even if it's something very odd, I'll be like, okay, that's an odd observation. And I just write down that observation, like in Google Keep or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sit back whenever just before an open mic or one day before, I'll be like, okay, looking at this odd observation, I'm like, okay. And then I'll lock myself in a room and I'll start talking about this observation. Okay. What do I really feel about it? And then try to come up with like a funny angle for this small observation. And then when I find something funny, when I'm talking alone in the room for like 1 hour, okay, I write that down. Oh, that's funny. And then I just write that down and I'll go and say the same line on stage. and I'll see whether they laugh. If they laugh, I'll try to ask myself why. If they don't laugh, I'll ask myself why. When they're laughing, and if they're just smiling, I try to answer more questions, and then it's just like repeat, rinse and repeat. It's a very sad process, you know. You have to keep doing it every time. You should have a lot of hope. Okay, this is gonna work. So it's just trial and error with every joke.
You just find yourself having a topic or a noun or something, and like just coming at it from every single possible angle that you possibly can think of, and then seeing which ones stick like that.
Well, I did think about that, but I tend to lean towards what I am excited about. In this particular observation, I think it's less about topic. It's more about, okay, this is something odd, or I saw that, and what do I really feel about that? So it's more about my take on that. So it gives a little bit of insight on who I am as a person. So when a joke tells you guys about what I really am, then it's a joke only for, you know, that then I've done something right. If I tell a joke which is just a topic and then it's a joke, then it's something like, okay, it's not that clear who's that person on stage.
Right.
So this is a question I'm still probably struggling with. How do I actually show who I am? So which is kind of like an odd question, odd direction to go.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know the thing, yeah. The go voice ahead. They say, but that's gonna, I mean, for even in music, I think they have that thing. No, you have your own voice when you're making, and I think I'm struggling with that. So I'm gonna need another 10 years to find out what my jokes are actually telling about me.
I mean, it makes so much sense. You know, you see so many comics who, especially like in the old days, like back in like the Rodney Dangerfield days, you had these guys whose jokes were meant to be sort of copied and shared and spread around, and you had these like one-liner masterpieces that anyone could just replicate and throw out, and it was just like the joke. But now it seems so prevalent that comedians connect what they're trying to make funny through their own personal experience and their own, like, the emotion that they feel about something, making that like this funny thing. And that seems to me to be so much harder. I think if I ever really, not that I think I could, but if I ever really wanted to be a stand-up comic, I don't know that I could take a part of myself, like a story of my own that isn't already inherently funny, like an embarrassing story. I don't think that I could take it and cut it and formulate it and like mold it into this perfect curvy sort of surprise that a good story joke is. I would probably be one of those guys who would happily be a jokester from the old days, you know, like,
take my wife, please. Even Rodney Dangerfield, no, he's an amazing guy, but he does say something about himself on those jokes too. I mean, even Rodney Dangerfield, I mean, you can quote him, but at the same time, there's a lot of things which is, he's this old, boisterous uncle who's there in a party. Yeah. And you already have that image when that joke has been told. So it's the funniest uncle in the party. So that's what Dangerfield is. And he says the most oddest thing and he has this funny twist.
That's so true. That's so true.
But I feel, I'm in the end, it should be funny, man. It doesn't matter if it's just a joke, if it's something about yourself. It is probably funnier when it's more to the truth. I mean, in whatever form, because if you're just getting on stage and being truthful but not being funny, you're not helping anyone. You just have to be funny in the end.
Yeah, yeah. When it comes to these like storytelling comedy style, like what are a few comedians that you really admire how they do it, and you know, like the style they have?
Oh wow!
I'm sure there's like way too many, but just a few, you know.
So I follow mostly joke telling comedians, but storytelling, Dave Chappelle is unbeatable in his arc and his stories, because even the, I mean, of course, this Mo, I'm just saying Mo for a random reason, but do you remember that baby joke in I think it was Killing Him Softly or somewhere. Oh man, he had this baby joke where he goes to a ghetto and he rolls down the window and says,
"Oh, the baby smoking on the corner."
Yeah, yes, baby smoking on the corner, and the entire story, the arc, oh, it's so unbelievably funny. So Chappelle is unbeatable in that. So,
do you still feel that way even about his most recent releases, like Sticks and Stones?
I think Sticks and Stones, he's just I mean, of course, Killing Him Softly, he was had his prime then.
Yeah, yeah.
But Sticks and Stones, I think now he's preaching to the choir. You know, he knows he's going against the cancel culture and few things. But I think he was funnier then.
Right, right. Okay. I mean, I didn't mean to drag anything like political into it. I just like, despite whatever topics he's on in these newer specials, he still has this perfect way of telling it. Like, if it's like really, really, you know, like testing people's patience with like this, like you said, this cancel culture stuff. But, he's just got this unbelievable talent.
Huh? But that's something I think we can kind of compare pretty cool, because just like you said, yeah, Dave Chappelle had his prime. He used to be better. And that's something we say so often about artists of any kind. Is this something you guys, as artists, and we haven't talked so much about where you at in your, let's call it, career, but is this something you worry about, or you fear, like, I don't know, 10 years from now or 20 years from now, people saying, yeah, Jordan Prince or Gagan Gopal, I liked him 20 years ago, but what he does now,
That is a great question. I think I would have that fear. Oh, okay, what if every day, Mo, I struggle with one question. Am I funnier than I was yesterday? Am I funny? So that is something we keep asking ourselves. I'm not saying Chappelle is not funny anymore. He is still one of the funniest man in this planet. But when you know your work, you're half-assing or you're not putting your 100%. I mean, it's like Metallica or even the great hits of the best bands. You know, when they're in their prime and when they get success and they, you know, they slack off a bit.
Yeah.
And there is a difference between that. I would say a good comparison is Daft Punk. You know, Daft Punk have been doing it they're not there together anymore, but they've been together for so many years and they kept getting better. They kept innovating with every releases. And in 2013, they released Random Access Memories, and one of the best. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, just a masterpiece, yeah.
Yeah, that's for me, like, you keep getting better. Even Bill Burr, getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's having his prime now. He's 52 or 55 or something. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Bill Burr thing, like, really surprised me. It's so good.
Is it something that affects you as a musician? Like, worrying, okay, I'm working on the next record. What if people say after this, oh, I really like the first or the first two albums, but now where are we going here?
My concern isn't that someone's going to like my first record more than my 30th record. Because they liked a record. So for me as a musician, that doesn't matter, I think, as much to like different artworks, like art styles, like comedy. But my biggest fear is like, 10 years after I'm dead, I blow up with fame for my music.
Oh,
that would suck so much to be dead. And then then it's like a Elliot Smith, Nick Drake sort of like just this post. I mean, Elliot Smith was super famous alive. I'm thinking of the wrong artist, but like someone that just like post death, they're like, oh man, that 12 Songs for 12 Friends record, man, what a masterpiece. And then it gets in, like, you know, they start putting it into movies and stuff, and like there's a documentary about me and I never get to see it.
Mm. Oh, it's not my biggest fear, but now I think it can still
now it is. It wasn't your biggest fear, but now it is.
Yeah, I never thought about it. I think now I should think about it for the next 1 week.
I wonder I think for a lot of creative people, that must be such a nightmare to be like, what if I'm putting like all of, I mean, I've been putting 30 years of effort into what I want to do for a living. And then maybe I have a freak accident. And then because I died like young, then it blows up. You know, it's like, come on, man.
Hey, Jordan, I have a question. Do you feel, how important is acceptance of your music to the people? You know, so in comedy, we have a immediate validation from the crowd. You know, is this joke good? They'll tell you right away by laughs. I want to know, like in music, do you have that direct correlation, or how do you judge your album or your song?
Oh, that's definitely a great question. I think we have the same thing, comedians and musicians, when there's this live performance. The only difference kind of being is that people will not laugh at a joke that they don't think is funny. And that's why it's so much more pressure for you guys, but they will clap at a song they didn't like.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
you just put this like pleasant, like song's over now. We're still talking at the bar, but the song's ended. So they're clapping. So there's still like, you can tell when people are interested and invested, especially when they sing along, and when you feel this energy in the room, like that's that instant validation, and it's incredible. I love that. Of course, I'm, you know, musicians and comedians and we need this attention. You know, like we're craving it, and it's definitely the same feeling. But with releasing music, then it's a bit trickier because you're kind of in the dark about a lot of things, like. You know, you feel validated if radio stations put it into the rotation. You're like, okay, that single's cool. They put it in, you know, this station and that station. That's nice. Oh, this college picked it up. That's cool. Oh, someone wants to do an interview. That's nice. But then at the end of the day, you're kind of just looking at numbers and wondering, like, is that number good enough for me or not?
Okay.
So it's a little bit different otherwise. But the live part is the same, for sure.
Okay. No, it's always interesting. It's like a good... interesting correlation between music and comedy, no?
Yeah.
But there's one, but I think it, or as I see it, and I have absolutely no experience in doing comedy, but still a huge difference that I see is that like the worst in music and also in like what I do within media is no reaction. But with a comedy show, no reaction is a reaction.
Mm. Yeah. Oh boy, it's the worst reaction sometimes, and I mean, imagine 25 to 50 blank faces looking at you, and they're not laughing, and they are supposed to laugh, and that, I mean, when you think about it, it's already quite strange, you know, like people are looking at you to have a involuntary reaction.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, even laugh is such an involuntary thing. It's a very physiological thing. And now people want, and you're setting your room in such a way that I periodically make them get this thing out of their mouth. Isn't that strange?
That's super strange, dude.
And I think when we think about it more, it is very strange thing we do. And I want to think that, I mean, this is quite, I don't know, evolutionary or something. And there were people hunting, there were people, you know, getting the berries and stuff. But I think comedians and the musicians, we were just entertaining after the hunting. You know,
yeah.
We were like, let me do this thing with the stones and stuff. You know what happened when we were hunting? This is what happened, man. Oh, that's so hilarious. Stop him.
we were the guys like juggling.
Yeah. We had to keep the people entertained when the others had, you know, died of depression or starvation, you know, like we wouldn't survive otherwise.
That's so true, man. I would be the guy next to the caveman who's actually like building the fire from scratch with this like this hump of like cattle meat over his shoulder that he caught with his bare hands, and I'd be there with my hands around my waist like, did you hear the one about the pterodactyl and the T-Rex, huh? And he's like, shut up, man. Just like,
and imagine if there's an improv group there next to the fire,
like... Yes, and oh my god, dude. Oh man, but that's so cool, dude. And I really think I really can't wait to see you do stand up again eventually. Do you Do you hear anything about any sort of opportunities for that? With music, it's a little bit harder, I think. I hear about some concerts, but for stand-up, do you find anything happening?
No, nothing, man. I mean, I think everything is... I mean, the bars are closed. There's a direct correlation between bars and comedy, you know? So, So if the bars are closed, I mean, maybe there will be open air probably once the bars start, you know, they allow us to open it. And secondly, once things clear up a bit, maybe, I don't know, I think things cannot get back to normal at least for a year. I was speaking to a comedian today, maybe it takes a year or two, you know, we all sit tight together for 50 people. Mm-hmm. All vaccinated maybe, and then we can have the clubs running. So at the moment, I don't see any good future. I mean, at least for now.
Did you ever join in on any of these like Zoom shows, like doing stand-up over Zoom or anything?
Oh, no, man. The one thing I really enjoy about stand-up, it's live.
Yeah.
So I know I'm being, I don't know, like a weirdo by not doing Zoom shows.
No, I did some live streams. I didn't like it at all. It's very different. Yeah.
Is it strange? I mean, I don't know. I don't see myself, but I've heard like mixed reviews now.
I mean, I definitely heard about a good handful of comedians doing Zoom shows, and they either thought like, yeah, you know, it's fine. You know, I can kind of just try things out and I still get paid for it. And then a few other people are like, man, screw that. I would never do that. It's not the same at all. So, I mean, there's just different philosophies on that. For me as a musician, like I've done two live streams since Corona shut everything down. One of them was kind of okay. I had a bit more control over what I could do and it was like comfortable situation. But the other one was like, oh man, it was just a really crowded Zoom and they kind of had bad organization. The software was kind of cheap feeling, like I just couldn't get things to run the way I wanted it to, and it was so stiff and I hated it. And I was like, I'm not going to do any more of these at all. You know, I think it's just you try it and you're like, this sucks, man. You know, you do it like you do a song over the Zoom and everyone has their mics muted. And then of course, you know, if it's like speaker view, it cuts to the first person that makes a sound after you're done. So you just finish that last strum of the guitar. And then on the Zoom call, there was this very sweet lady who was just like quietly clapping into the lens like this. Like,
that's so sweet.
And it was, I felt like I was just playing for her and I was like, oh man, that's nice, but I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, it's really sad how much validation we need, no? I mean,
absolutely.
But I'm going to take anything. Maybe I should do a Zoom show sometime. But
I mean, if they offer it, it'd be interesting to know what your experience was when you did it. We can always call you and get an update about it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, definitely.
Do you know where, like, do you have anything like online or anything where people can see any clips or anything of that you've done?
Oh man, unfortunately nothing online. So I think my main motivation is my jokes will not be published till, I mean, the idea was to get it published in 2020, but because I want them to be together in a YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. But people can follow me on Instagram, I think. Not so Gagan. That's my Instagram handle. Change everything.
Not so Gagan?
Yeah, it's N-O, yeah, not so, and Gagan. It's like G-A-G-A-N. And it's just not a so private Gagan account. I mean, I'm so bad at media stuff. Mo, I think you should be better at this. I just,
as long as it's in Tübingen.
Yeah, as long as it's in Tübingen, Freiburg, somewhere. But I just like, you know, I think I enjoy more the live thing. I just like telling jokes in private and stuff. So maybe I should change my game, you know, I don't know.
But I have one more question since we talked so much about the uncertain future. And you mentioned earlier that for certain things you said it might take you another 10 years or something. Do you have defined goals as a comedian or any defined goal?
Yeah, I have a few defined goals. I mean, my current goal is to do 1 hour of stand-up, you know, so at least, I mean, this was my goal last year, end of last year sometime. So to get 1 hour of 60 minutes of good jokes and maybe do something with that, have a show of my own or like tour with that. So that is my current goal. So I usually go one goal at a time. So I think if I can achieve that, but, and then maybe I'll be thinking more about what to do with that hour or go to more festivals. Because
would you ever try and record hire some people to record a special for you in a venue that you could release on YouTube like Mark Norman did?
I don't think so. I feel Norman is in such a different level. He's doing it for 15 odd years so he's way ahead of me. So I'm more interested in the craft of telling jokes and how to hone that. Mm-hmm. So if I get 60 minutes of great stuff, I can do something, play around with that, and maybe go to a couple of places and probably go to some contests or festivals and stuff. So this is my current goal. And then maybe I'll think about, I don't know, social media. And
for you, it's more about like building the actual hour of good material first.
Yeah, so maybe I should change everything, man. I might be completely wrong.
No, it sounds like a great goal, actually, to have the content first. And then, you know, when you have the hard work ready, then you can, you know, promote or change whatever you need to change.
Yeah, so I want to have those jokes, which, okay, these things work. Let me keep pushing them. So that's why I don't have any YouTube channel also right now, because, I mean, even if something happens, even if it doesn't happen, what am I going to do right now? I can't do them live. I don't want to spend those jokes right away. So I want to do them. I want to pack them up, yeah. Get them ready, and then probably play around later.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds nice.
That's a great goal. I think having a solid hour, it's a lot of work. And I think it's a great goal to have for a comic, man. I mean, I believe in you. I think that would be really cool.
Oh, thanks, man. That's I really appreciate that. I don't know if it's like an album for you guys. I mean, it's like
in
music, it's like an album. No. So for me, I wouldn't say it's a special, but I just want to have 1 hour. Okay. If I can go to a room, I can entertain them for 1 hour. So I want to have that. So yeah. If I get that going, then maybe I can build more.
The funny difference between an hour album and an hour special is that musicians like build the whole album and then they release it and then they spend a year playing the same album over and over live. For a comedian, they spend, I don't know, a year or two building the hour up. Then when they release it, they have to start from the beginning again.
Yeah. So once the jokes are online, I cannot do them anymore. So that is...
That's so hard, man. You're back to zero every time you drop a special or drop an hour.
Yeah. So that, I mean, it's the con of the game, I think. You're right. It's people can request, hey, play this song. But in jokes, I mean, in comedy, you can't, hey, can you do that joke again? So yeah, it's really
But that's
rare.
Something that I'm... That's... So... That I have seen happening before in Germany,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, I also in German, really? I mean, that is.
You saw them requesting a joke?
Like I saw this once at an open mic, and I often experienced it in like private circumstances. Hey, yo, go tell that joke. You know where the rabbit does that and whatsoever. Could be a German thing, I guess.
I think there are like so few jokes here in the land. They just want to play around with the same jokes.
Like, we know that this one works very well. And why fix what is not broken, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the Russian system. No? If the, yeah, something is working, keep it running. You know, don't want to... if the car is running, keep it running.
Keep it running, yeah. That's crazy.
I have one last question from my side for you, Gagan. Is there anything you could think of as a fancy merchandise item for Jordan's upcoming album?
Oh, fancy merchandise item. Something which can I go random or something very
totally
specific
random.
To Jordan?
Go random with it.
I would say bracelets, man. I think that's just, we have to bring back bracelets.
Like those rubber ones that you get at festivals?
Yeah. Don't you miss good old bracelets? Like which says Jordan, just bracelets with Jordan. And
it could be like WWJD.
No.
I haven't seen those in a long time.
I just went completely against what improv stands for. No, not that.
No, not that.
Yeah. He just totally.
That's what podcasts are. Podcasts are improv shows with a no ending.
But you know, I think once I, even when I was doing improv, I realized it was funnier sometimes when I just said no. I just rejected their idea. Oh, it's the best feeling. Yeah,
that just goes so against the grain of the system.
Yeah, it's like everyone is yes anding and I'm just like no. I wanted to say no to your idea right now.
Or the word that's so hard when you're like, you start a scene and someone's like, hey Charlie, can you get more pastries? We have to get the shipment of baking goods ready before the kids come over. And they're like, what are you talking about? We're not baking things for kids.
We're on
a boat. And you're like, what are you doing? I set it all up. You just had to eat it.
Oh yeah, I used to hate people who used to do improv like that. And also like when they say, hey Charlie, can you do this? Yeah, sure, Sylvia. No, my name is, Rukmani or something. They used to completely change the name with every sentence. Oh yeah, it was really annoying.
But yeah, bracelets it is. And I
wrote it down.
I asked for that because I don't know if you noticed, if you have listened to the last episode, Gagan, that we had kind of a deal in terms of that, Jordan, if you find a number of pre-orders that should have happened until a certain date, and that happens, there will be an extra merch item.
Yes, so I have decided we're going to add the pre-order link for the new album in the description for this episode that, for your knowledge, Gagan comes out Thursday morning.
Whoa.
We will. So right now what we have for the merchandise listing is we have the CD, and if we have the bundles that have like stickers and tote bags and buttons and stuff like the classics. But if we get the pre-order number to 100 pre-orders, then I will definitely get Jordan Prince Simple Swimmer, which is the name of the album, Simple Swimmer hats.
Nice.
I've been wearing like these kinds of hats for a long time. I think it's time to have some Jordan Prince hats for other people. And if we get the pre-order to 200 of whatever of the bundle deals you choose from, we will add limited edition hoodies as well.
Ooh, all with Geese artwork.
All with the original artwork for this specific album, which has its own look and brand. I would say 100 pre-orders, hats, 200 pre-orders, hoodies. And you know what? Maybe for those, if we get to 200 and people are getting hoodies, I think I'm just going to order a limited edition of bracelets as well.
Nice.
And just throw them in the box with it.
Nice.
So you can have the sticker, the tote, the bag, the pin, the bracelet, the hoodie, the hat. You can just be a good old Jordan Prince fan.
I would love it. Can cool. I order right away? Or
absolutely, man. It's available right now.
Great.
So I would say we could wrap it up here. Gagan, thank you so much, man. This has been such a great episode. It's such a pleasure to hear your backstory and to hear your thoughts on comedy. And man, I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, man. It was really a pleasure, and it was great meeting my favorite Tubingen friend, Mo. And
I've never been in Tubingen, by the way.
Imagine if you go to Tubingen and everyone recognizes you. Oh, it's Mo is here.
We already built a statue last week.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Tom. Tom from Tubingen.
Tubingen Tom. Yeah,
Tubingen Tom.
Tubingen Tom.
Oh,
and thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Man, pleasure's all ours, man. Have a great night. Stay safe, stay healthy, and let us know if you do a Zoom show or next time you have a real show, and we'll do a check-in where we can ask you back to give us an update on how you're doing.
Definitely, will do.
All right, buddy. Have a good night, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care, guys. Bye.
Oh, yeah. What a wonderful episode. If you enjoyed today's episode and you like our show, please go to Apple Podcasts, give us a subscription or a review or a comment. It really helps new listeners find our show. You can also follow us on Instagram at Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. We're also now on Facebook and on YouTube and on Twitter at Fartsy Artsy. No, at Artsy Fartsy Pod. We changed it at Artsy Fartsy Pod. Woo! So, yes, and if you want to financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/JordanPrince, and where you can submit for as low as $3 a month some money to help us get this show bigger and better just for you. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Look out, baby, the saints are coming through, and it's all over now.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prince und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.